supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to Voices in the Family. I'm Jennifer Lynn, in for Dr. Dan Gottlieb, who is getting over a cold. Feel better, Dan. It takes more than great sex to make a relationship work, but if you're like a growing number of young people, a stable, committed relationship might not be what you're looking for, not yet anyway. Drawing from recent data, researchers at the Kinsey Institute note that young adult heterosexual men and women are turning away from traditional forms of courtship and pursuing romantic relationships to embrace more casual hookups. 60 to 80% of college students report having some sort of sexual hookup experience, and the trend is working its way into the world of older young adults who appear to be delaying marriage and delaying having children. Hookups are intended to meet the needs of sexual desire without the dynamics of a more enduring emotional and physical connection. On today's show, we'll talk about sexual hookup culture. It's a subject that's drawing the attention of sociologists, psychologists, anthropologists, even biologists, and they're trying to make sense of it all. My guests are Justin R. Garcia and Leslie C. Bell. Justin Garcia is an evolutionary biologist at the Kinsey Institute for Research in Sex, Gender, and Reproduction. He is one of the authors of the article Sexual Hookup Culture, a Review. It's the cover story in the February edition of the APA Monitor on Psychology. He joins us by phone. Justin, thanks for making time for us.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Leslie Bell is a sociologist and psychotherapist and the author of Hard to Get, 20-something Women and the Paradox of Sexual Freedom. And that book comes out this week. She joins us by phone from the West Coast. Welcome to Voices, Leslie.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And, of course, we are taking your calls today at 1-888-477-9499. What are your thoughts about sexual hookup culture? Is it helpful? Is it a helpful part of young adult development? Mm-hmm. Or does it leave you or your loved one confused and unsatisfied? And we'd like to hear from parents, young people, feminists, anybody out there, give us a call today. 1-888-477-9499. And let's be clear, this subject matter is not appropriate for everyone. So Justin Garcia, I'm sad as I ask this question. Is flowers candy? Is dating dead?
I think it's a good question to ask. It's certainly something we've been hearing a lot about, including a recent piece in the New York Times suggesting that courtship is dead. I don't think it's completely dead. I don't think dating can ever really die, because I think it'll mean the end of our species. Courtship, the way I view courtship, is so important to who we are, to eventually forming long-term romantic relationships, but particularly among youth, and what we often call emerging adults, about the ages from 18 to 25. Dating culture among that group is practically dead. There's been this rise in hookup culture, and most relationships don't start from a young man going to a young woman's home and meeting her parents, and dinner and a movie. In fact, most of these relationships tend to be starting when sexual behavior happens first. So there's sort of, my joke is often college students date today by waking up next to someone and saying, hey, want to go to lunch?
Ba-dum-bum. So, well, as
not a comedian, I'm
yeah. But you know, your work infers that sexual hookups are a major part of the sexual development of many young people. So, help us understand what the hookups are and what they are not. We need a little walkthrough here.
Oh, sure. So, hookups—it's actually a pretty ambiguous term, and I think that's on purpose. Linguists often argue that when terms are ambiguous, they serve a function. There's a reason why we like to keep them not really well defined. This often annoys some of my psychology colleagues because we have a hard time knowing exactly what happens, and the behaviors range from kissing and making out to oral sex or intercourse, and there's a lot of variation on the types of behaviors that one's engage in during these hookup encounters. And one of our questions is trying to understand when and why. In our most recent data, about 40% of the hookups involve intercourse, so they involve sexual intercourse. So there's a lot of variation in what happens, and I think there's a lot of variation in what it means and why people, by both men and women, are engaging in them.
Yeah, and go ahead, please.
I think the most important part is that they're really uncommitted. So hookups, the real interesting cultural issue here is that they're not any kind of commitment. There's no discussion about what might happen afterwards. There's no discussion about what people's feelings are, or the meaning of the encounter. So they're sort of the modern one-night stand, but not with the same ideas that it's sort of someone reneging or lying. It's sort of very face value. This is physical pleasure above any type of commitment. And that's pretty unique, not just in American history, but actually cross-culturally for societies to engage anyone to really engage in such high rates of quote-unquote casual sex.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Leslie, what's your take? You know, what are hookups and what aren't they?
I mean, I would agree with Justin. They certainly are very ambiguous. It, as he says, they can range from, you know, minimal physical contact, kissing and hooking up, all the way to intercourse and oral sex. They can be serial, right? There are certainly people who have hookups with the same person over time. It doesn't have to be just literally a one-night stand. But the idea, you know, the defining feature of it, as he's also suggested, is the lack of commitment involved. And generally the lack of there being some acknowledgement of an emotional component to the connection. That's not to say that people don't feel emotions in hookups. They certainly do, but it's not in a relationship context, so that's not something that's being acknowledged between the partners generally.
Well, young people certainly didn't invent sexual freedom. You know, one-night stands have been around for a long, long time. I suppose, you know, some of their own parents have hooked up themselves. What's different about sexual hookups now, Leslie, than, say, something that some of us older folks might be more familiar with?
That's a great question. You know, certainly the degree to which it's acceptable for young women, acceptable and even encouraged for young women to participate in them, is, I think, historically different. Even though one-night stands were more acceptable in the past, there was, I mean, arguably always a bit more danger for women, a sort of danger in terms of social sanction for women to participate in them than for men. And there is, at least for, you know, a chunk of time, I argue kind of in the 20s in particular, this social space that now exists where it is socially acceptable for young women and young men to participate to equal degrees in hookups, and even an encouragement, a sense that that's where you're going to figure yourself out, that's where your sense of yourself as a sexual being is going to develop, and that's very different. We, you know, haven't, as a culture, encouraged and thought about that as the place to figure out one's sexual development before.
Mm-hmm. And I want to ask you about how a sexual hookup culture could be or may not be promoting a healthy sexual development for women in particular, Leslie, because you've written about young women. But first, I want to say, you know, Justin, this social acceptance is certainly expanding in the realm of just having a place. What is new is Facebook and sexting, where people can have a sexual encounter from anywhere at any time.
Yeah, and it's largely the discussions that we're having. I think the fact that in 2011 we saw two major movies dealing with No Strings Attached, Friends with Benefits, these ideas that people are having these uncommitted sexual encounters. Interestingly, not to ruin the movies for anyone who hasn't seen them, but interestingly, the common theme, of course, in all of our media, though, is that heterosexual love conquers all. In the end, I agree with Leslie. I think that, I'm sure the points that she'll share more in a bit, that these can be really hard, particularly for women, but for young people in terms of navigating their desires and their freedoms. But we're in a culture that we're willing to talk about. I mean, I'm shocked. I teach to university students, undergraduate students, and I'm shocked when they say things. I'll be in a lecture course, and they'll say something about their hookups this weekend. And granted, I know what I study, but it's a type of discussion that's fairly new in our own history, the willingness, the acceptance to talk about these things, these parts of the personal life as being something public.
Well, you say, in your data, it's showing that sexual hookups are being openly talked about. Now, who's leading this discourse, and what are they really saying besides just mentioning it in your classroom?
Yeah, I think there's this increasing part of it. I think is positive, and this is the idea that women are feeling more agentic. They're, in particular, women are feeling more agentic, more willing to talk about their sexuality. And this is Leslie also talked about some of this stuff as it's her specialty. But part of it is also navigating a scene. So if the average college student has two hookups for every first date. And if we're not seeing a dating culture on campus, well, then it also is a signifier for engaging in the group activity, engaging what others are engaging in. So my question often is my interest in the study of love and the start of romantic love is, well, how are college students forming relationships and finding love if there's not that dating culture? Well, then they must turn to hookups in that pursuit, and that's what some of our data is suggesting.
Well, we're talking about sexual hookup culture here on Voices in the Family with Justin Garcia and Leslie Bell. And Justin is with the Kinsey Institute. He's one of the authors of the article Sexual Hookup Culture, A Review. It is featured in this month's APA Monitor, and he's an evolutionary biologist. Leslie Bell is a sociologist and psychotherapist in California, and she just published the book Hard to Get, 20-something Women and the Paradox of Sexual Freedom. Leslie, tell me about that title.
The paradox that I'm talking about is the fact that young women, and so the women that I spoke with and interviewed for my book were between the ages of 24 and 29. Young women today are literally the, you know, sort of most free and empowered group of women that's ever existed historically. They, you know, came of age, they were born after the passage of all kinds of laws that allow for their formal freedom in educational endeavors, in the professional world, after the sexual revolution happened, the pill, you know, just on and on. All of the freedoms that the feminist movement fought for, these women are the beneficiaries of. And so it would seem as though they're perfectly positioned to sort of get all that they want in terms of sex and relationships, in addition to their kind of educational and professional endeavors. But what I found is that all of that freedom, while extremely liberating and potentially empowering, has also come with a large number of very mixed messages that young women get about how to navigate their personal lives in their 20s. So you should be, you know, sexually adventurous and have lots of different partners and experiment with hookups, but we still do, as a culture, have this sense that there's a number, although most women couldn't tell me the actual number, a number past which you'd better, a number of partners past which you'd better not go, else you be perceived as or feel yourself to be a slut or a whore or the kind of younger person term, a hoe. Similarly, you know, you should use your 20s not to be in relationships because that might hamper your career and personal development, but you'd better get married by the time you're 30 or the pool of men will have dried up if you're heterosexual and you may not be able to have a child by the time you're 35 when your biological clock starts to really sort of slow down. So the paradox I'm describing is this huge opening up of freedom and yet a huge array then of mixed messages that makes it hard for women to get what they want and harder than we might expect given kind of the backdrop of freedoms that they have.
Sure. And I do want to give out the number of Voices in the Family here, 1-888-477-9499, if you want to join our conversation. We're talking about sexual hookup culture. Now, Leslie, back to the question I was starting to get into earlier. So after what you've just said so wonderfully, how does the sexual hookup culture promote sexual healthy sexual development and leading women towards some other types of places to be experiencing a full, richer love experience, a full, richer sexual experience, and so forth.
Mm-hmm. I mean, certainly implicit in the hookup culture is, or as it currently exists, is an acknowledgement of female sexual desire, that women have desires for sex, which, you know, is somewhat still a radical proposition, although it's becoming less, and that sex can be pleasurable and desirable outside of relationships. You know, in some ways, hookup culture is a logical outgrowth of the decoupling of sex and reproduction. You know, since the introduction of reliable birth control, we now have this capacity to have sex for purely reasons of desire and pleasure. And so that is absolutely to the good that, you know, women should have a sense that that's a reason for having sex. It's not an obligation. It's not just lie back and think of England. You know, these sort of old versions.
What is that a reference to?
It's a reference to, you know, as you're having sex with someone in a very unpleasurable way. I don't actually know where it originally derives from, but, you know, that it, basically tolerate it and get through it. Okay. It's your duty to your husband, basically. So lie back and think of England. I don't know why England. It's a good question.
It's okay. We won't pick on England today. It could be anywhere.
Yeah, so certainly that acknowledgement of desire and pleasure as just a human, you know, a part of our humanity is certainly helpful, I believe, for young women's sexual development.
Yeah, yeah. And Justin, you mentioned a couple of films, and you didn't want to be a spoiler or anything, but certainly in film, in video, music video, in music, many places. Is media shaping sexual scripts, or is it a reflection of them, or perhaps a combination?
Yeah, I think it's a combination. So if I put on my evolutionary biologist hat, I think that the culture that we produce, the music and the literature and the movies, all sorts of sort of entertainment, are in many ways reflections of sort of some dispositions of our own human nature. On the other hand, I think that these often, and there's some evidence that there's a lot of evidence actually that these forms of entertainment sort of spiral away from that, and then we start to compete with what we see around us. And what we, well, when one of our studies on hookup behavior on a campus in New York, what psychologists call pluralistic ignorance, and that's that everyone's trying to compete with the false norm. So media helps us or allows us to form a sense of what the norms are. And with the pluralistic, what psychologists call pluralistic ignorance, we're all trying to compete with our perception of the norm, but in fact our perceptions are often wrong. And this has been really well studied in terms of college students often drinking. They binge drink because they think that others are drinking a lot more than they themselves are. And we found that something similar is happening with hookups and sexual behavior. They think that, and exactly to the point Leslie was just saying, they think that everyone else is more comfortable. So women think that other women are much more comfortable engaging in a variety of behaviors and hookups. But not only that, men also think that women are much more comfortable than they actually are in a variety of these hookup behaviors. So then we're all trying to compete with these perceived norms, even though they're not actually the truth, because we don't really talk to each other and say, so in many ways, our sort of media is impacting our perceptions, and our perceptions are impacting our behaviors in terms of what we're trying to keep up with.
So you're saying there's a pressure, an underlying pressure to see what this is, to partake perhaps, right?
Yeah.
Maybe for men and women? Do you think that's equal for men and women?
I think that it's different for men and women, but I think we often forget, the risks are greater for women in terms of sexually transmitted infections, unintended pregnancies, sexual violence and coercion. So women do face more risks on average than men. But I think that there's a lot going on with men that we often sort of chalk it up to, popularly to thinking, well, men like sexual variety more. So of course they're into engaging in this. But what we're finding is that there's no gender difference in the rates of men and women who are hooking up looking for love, and there's both are having regret, both are having negative outcomes, but both are also on average having positive outcomes. They're saying that they generally enjoy the experience, but they're not necessarily getting out of it what they want. So I think it's important to think about both men and women and how they're going about trying to get what they want, albeit differently.
It's complicated. We're talking about sexual hookup culture. I'm joined by evolutionary biologist Justin Garcia and sociologist, psychologist, and author Leslie Bell. And we're going to continue our conversation and take some of your phone calls right after this break. I'm Jennifer Lynn, in for Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family here on WHYY-FM.
Guardian Nurses Healthcare Advocates supports WHYY. Serving the region for 10 years, these registered nurses accompany individuals to doctors, help get second opinions, and help with insurance claims. GuardianNurses.com. Guardian Nurses, lighting your way through the healthcare maze.
Devereaux supports WHYY, a national behavioral healthcare organization founded and headquartered in Philadelphia. Devereaux is celebrating its 100th anniversary of providing innovative care for individuals with behavioral challenges, mental health illness, and developmental disabilities. Founded in 1912 by Philadelphia schoolteacher Helena Devereaux, the organization was developed to provide help to children and adults with special needs. Find more information about Devereaux and its centennial anniversary at 610-542-3041 or online at devereaux.org.
Supporting WHYY, Clean Currents, helping businesses and residents reduce their carbon footprint with clean, local Pennsylvania wind power. To learn more about the region's only certified B Corporation electricity supplier, windpowerpa.com.
We're back. You're listening to Voices in the Family. Thanks for joining us. I'm Jennifer Lynn, in for Dan Gottlieb, who's out with a cold. And we're talking about sexual hookup culture here on Voices with two guests, Justin Garcia, an evolutionary biologist, and Leslie Bell. She's an author, sociologist, and psychotherapist. And please, feel free to give us a holler. We're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. I think I'd like to go to the phones straight off and hear from Bill. Bill has a comment for Voices. Hello, Bill.
Yeah, hi, Jen, and hi, guests. I have two grown daughters, 34 and 31, and then I have a son who's 15. And one thing I've really tried to convey to all my kids, you know, as I kind of proceeded through adolescence and through college, is that lust and love are excellent things, but they get into trouble when they confuse one with the other. So if they're attracted to somebody and they're feeling a lot of chemistry and they think that they're feeling love, or if they feel like they are feeling, you know, no chemistry, and, you know, and yet they are. I think the problem is that often people just don't have a sense of themselves. And it's great if you can find love and lust in the same person, but of course that doesn't always happen right away. And so I think sometimes people hook up because they're looking for lust, but they're trying to get it through sex, and it's really kind of a bad bargain. And I think it's particularly for girls. I think often boys, you know, especially when they first start out, just want lust and maybe move on down the road to wanting something a little bit more emotional. So I think it's really a question for people as they develop, and this is for adults too. It's to figure out what you want, you know, and figure out what you're feeling and what somebody has to offer for you.
Well, Bill, I didn't plan to in the audience, but I know that you're a friend of mine. Thanks for calling in. And I appreciate Bill's perspective from a parent of older girls, young adults. Leslie, you wanna, did anything ring true with you?
Absolutely. The question of what people actually want and understanding their desires is really complicated business. And, you know, both, and sex is filled with, you know, as I suggested, I think, earlier, sex does bring in emotions, even if one is having, you know, ostensibly casual sex. People generally have some feelings about that, and I think that is part of what, you know, people can feel confused about when they're engaged in hookups. You know, sometimes, absolutely, it's purely just sexual desire, and I've spoken with women who've felt really good about the hookups they've had and felt like it was a period in their lives when they weren't looking for anything more, and it really just built their sense of self. But where people get into trouble is when there are other desires at play, and things get very confusing and murky, and as the caller suggests, people can end up, you know, equating sex with love as opposed to it being sort of a purely sexual experience, and that can end up being very confusing.
And Justin, not to cut you off on weighing in, but I do want to ask you, you've learned that while men report being more sexually satisfied as the result of a sexual hookup than women do, women report satisfaction in other ways. They said they felt excited or desired. It doesn't sound very fair. Are women coming at the sexual hookup culture from different places, but then they are getting some sort of end result that is not quite equal?
Yeah, so there's two parts. I think, at least in our initial work at looking at what the motivations are for people to engage in hookups, we were shocked that the genders were so similar in their desires. About 50% of men and women said, at least young adults, emerging adults, were saying they were hooking up looking for a relationship, 90% saying they wanted sexual satisfaction, most physical satisfaction. But 50% also said so 50% wanted a relationship, and 50% wanted emotional satisfaction. And that's really an interesting, very complicated, exactly as was just said, very complicated part to think about. What is it that's emotionally satisfying about it? What does that even mean as a construct? So the motivations seem to be very similar, at least among college students, for engaging in these behaviors. But the outcomes can be quite different. And I think part of that emotional satisfaction, people who feel desired afterwards, it means engaging in this, in these types of sexual activities, well, then it says to someone, well, someone was interested in me. Someone wanted to have sex with me. Someone desired me. I aroused someone else. So it plays into our sort of psychology of self, particularly a sexual self. So I think that's happening. But the outcomes, as you're saying, are quite different. We know that women tend to have higher rates of regret on average, and we know that women tend to be less sexually satisfied. And so from some of our recent data here in my laboratory, we're showing that orgasm rates are also quite lower for women than men. So both men and women orgasm less in a hookup than they do in a romantic relationship. But particularly for women, the rates are quite low. So there's a couple of reasons that could be. One is that particularly on college students, they're young, they're sort of finding out who they are as sexual and romantic beings and sort of have to learn the ropes a bit. But part of it, I think, is also these points that were raised earlier about entitlement to pleasure and entitlement to satisfaction, and particularly for women, creating a discourse in America that we can talk about sexual activity and not shame, and talk about it in a way that both men and women are entitled to pleasure and satisfaction and health, healthy encounters. And we're not there yet. We're not there yet in America.
Okay, well, I think this works in quite nicely, going to the phones and hearing from Jackie. Jackie's 25. Sorry to give out your age, but it was given to me, so it seemed like public record here. So, Jackie, any comments about what we're seeing?
Well, yeah, I mean, I went to 4 years of undergraduate college, and I, you know, threw myself into that belief that I need to experience different types of people and sexually, and I found that every single time, you know, I had one of these hookups, I kind of was searching for a connection with somebody, wasn't getting it, and really what I thought was going to start out as like a physical need. I found wasn't satisfying at all to get that physical need met, where the emotional connection wasn't happening. And I find now with my partner, who I, you know, am very committed to now, that, you know, the emotional connection piece actually makes the whole physical piece much better. So I think that it confused me. While it helped me that whole phase of my life, I think every time it happened, I left feeling unsatisfied and unhappy with myself.
Well, thank you for that, Jackie. I appreciate your call to Voices in the Family. Justin, that certainly resonates with some of the work you're doing. And Leslie, Jackie could have made an appearance in your book. you know, lots of anecdotes in your book from young women that really mirror what Jackie's saying. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. There's certainly, I mean, one of the things I talk about in the book, and, you know, while hookup culture can be really helpful to people in the sense that it you know, it signals much greater entitlement for women to have sex similarly as men do and desire sex similarly as men do, it can also feel like a pressure that is not actually right for everyone. You know, as your earlier caller suggested, figuring out your own desires, and as Justin suggested too, in the face of what we see in the culture and what we think is the norm, can feel like pressure and not so helpful sometimes to people whose desires go against what the kind of what they perceive as the norm and what they're feeling pressured to do. So for Jackie, for instance, you know, it sounds like she, you know, wanted those experiences and felt like that, you know, would be a helpful way to, get to a connection, but the idea that that's the only way to do it, or that that's the primary thing one ought to be doing in college and one's 20s, can feel inhibiting to people also from expressing their other desires for connection, for a relationship, and that, I don't think, serves anybody.
Mm-hmm. I get that. Well, Justin, it appears in general men initiate hookups. What's with that kind of gender gap?
I think that's part of a more standard, just as dating tended to be more initiated by men, they tend to be, hookups tend to be more initiated by men, and particularly in the environments that they're happening, things like bars. There's still a lot of gender rules that rule in these types of places where men might buy a drink, men might ask a woman to dance, men might sort of initiate a sexual encounter, and that's true of sexual encounters among relationship couples as well. Men tend to, on average, initiate more. So I think that's sort of the battle of the sexes in our society. We're in a recent study of ours separately. We're looking at changing gender roles, things like asking someone out on a date, asking someone for a hookup, paying for a meal, and there's still a lot of people who want to follow those traditional rules, partly because the tradition allows a lot of people to know where they stand. They're sort of comfortable with it. They know that that's how it's done, even though a lot of us are thinking about ways to equalize the sexes.
Yeah, so it's old school in the new school, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to go back to the phones. It's Voices in the Family. And if you'd like to give us a call today and chime in on what we're talking about, our number is 1-888-477-9499. We're talking about sexual hookup culture today. And on the phone, I have Diane. Diane, welcome to Voices.
Hi there. I'm a mom with a tween and a teen. And the feedback that I'm getting is so alien and so appalling that I find myself just floundering to hear a child say, "Oh, girls never would expect a boy to ask them out. You're so, you know, dinosaur age, mom. Girls, you know, it's boys don't ask girls out.
What do they really think, right?" Sorry to interrupt.
and to hear the feedback. Well, the important thing is for a boy to have sex with as many women as possible. This is from a 13-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And a boy, not a man, but for a boy to have sex with as many girls as possible. And, gosh, I feel so left out because all the other kids are having sex and doing drugs after school. And this is in a rather elite, coddled, cradled, accosted, intellectual and academic environment. I personally see a couple of things that probably are warning signs, or maybe they're just me. Anecdotally, I see at preschool one child hugging another and giving them a kiss and being reprimanded publicly for having done that. Now, if expression of affection from one child to another is treated like a disciplinary action, I don't know what message that sends, but it bothers me coming from a different generation. I see that everything from iFunny to the music that the kids are listening to describes something. I don't need to go into that. You know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I see that the very way that schools plan social events is sort of set up to create a premium on the most aggressive, usually boy, but maybe also girl, sort of staking their claim on another kid rather than doing things together so that they can all get to know one another without pressure. These are just little observations of a mom. I laughingly told your screener that I thought it was maybe because they hadn't gotten a chance to go to dancing class, but I realized that in my generation, most people didn't go to dancing class, and somehow they learned that there was a very tried and true way to get to know someone, first maybe through group activities, then through more individual activities, then perhaps through more intimate activities, and then deciding, is this someone I want to spend a lot of time with? Mm-hmm. And that progression, I think, was lost sometime in the 70s. People went straight from, hi, you know, can I have your phone number, to moving in together and living off campus in college.
Yeah.
Now we've moved it down to freshman year of high school, or even into middle school.
Yeah, I have to move on now. But thank you so much, Diane. You bring up so many interesting points. I actually don't know where to begin, but I heard you snicker in the background, Justin. So we'll start with you.
Yeah, I think I agree in many ways that we're seeing so many, and particularly with younger youth, younger ages, and so my research specialty tends to be mostly on college students, but seeing with younger youth, and it's often that conversations can be really difficult. When I was home for the holidays, I said to my two nieces, I said, "Did you know what sexting is? Don't sex." And but they're conversations that we actually are having to have with younger and younger adolescents and kids about thinking about their decisions and their behaviors and trying to keep up. And at the same time, we're culturally seeing average age of puberty dropping. We're seeing average age of first marriage increasing. So we're creating these historically unprecedented gaps where people are, including quite young people, are physiologically being primed to reproduce, but not thinking about marriage and reproduction. So we've really changed the very way we think about sex and reproduction and relationships and marriages and families so much in the last few decades. I think Diane's right about that. And it can be frustrating and worrisome, particularly for really young. We don't want to often think about, particularly in the U.S., we don't really talk about childhood sexual experiences. And how do we manage those? How do we encourage healthy sexuality? Sure. These are tough questions, and I don't think we've got clear answers yet.
Mm-hmm. And we are up on a break, so Leslie, I just want to say I've jotted down a couple notes. You know, I personally don't want young people to be pressured into doing anything that they don't want to do, and if they do something that they, quote, regret, I hope they don't beat themselves up about it. That sort of came to mind as I was listening to what Diane had to say. What came to your mind when you were listening to her?
Definitely. I think as Justin suggested, one of the things we really lack in our country is a kind of sexuality education that could happen at younger ages, as he's suggesting. Not only because puberty is happening earlier, but because children do have sexual feelings, and the transition from, mm-hmm. a child's body to an adult body happens extremely quickly and confusingly, and the onset... does that mean that we're on a break?
Oh, no, we're still here.
Oh, no, okay. the onset of those desires can be exciting and confusing, and we don't give kids a lot of help. And as Justin suggested, we're very prone to thinking about the, what the cultural norm is and societal norm is, and we generally overestimate the degree to which people are having casual sex, enjoying casual sex, number of partners, so that we then feel pressured to do something that may not actually be in line with our own desires. Mm-hmm. So giving kids a real education in, both their bodies and, what actually is happening among people, I think can be very helpful. And I really empathize with Diane feeling alienated by her kids, but I just really encourage parents to keep trying to have those conversations and really understand what the pressures are that their kids are feeling and educate themselves about the reality of what practices kids are engaged in so that they can counter those false sort of perceptions.
Well, that's good advice, and I think when we come back after the break, we'll continue talking about parenting and some of these sort of big educations that we are having to take on ourselves and learn about the ways of the younger folks. And I have to say goodbye to our guest, Justin Garcia. He has other things to do, but thank you so much for joining us. Evolutionary biologist Justin Garcia with the Kinsey Institute, and he's one of the authors of an article called Sexual Hookup Culture, a Review, and you can read it. It's the cover story of the February edition of the APA Monitor on Psychology. Thank you, Justin, for joining us. And we're going to take our break, come back and talk about sexual hookup culture, and we will continue our conversation and take a few more calls. I'm Jennifer Lynn, in for Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family here on WHYY-FM.
The Richard A. Reif Heart Institute of Doylestown Hospital supports WHYY. When a heart attack strikes, cardiac specialists know it's survival of the fastest. At Doylestown, they've worked to streamline every step of the treatment process, striving for faster care, fewer complications, and the best possible outcomes. Located on West State Street in Doylestown, the Heart Institute is now easily accessible via the Route 202 expansion. Details at dh.org devereaux.org/heart.
Devereaux supports WHYY, a national behavioral healthcare organization founded and headquartered in Philadelphia. Devereaux is celebrating its 100th anniversary of providing innovative care for individuals with behavioral challenges, mental health illness, and developmental disabilities. Founded in 1912 by Philadelphia schoolteacher Helena Devereaux, the organization was developed to provide help to children and adults with special needs. Find more information about Devereaux and its centennial anniversary at 610-542-3041 or online at devereaux.org.
We're back. You're listening to Voices in the Family. I'm Jennifer Lynn, in for Dr. Dan Gottlieb. We're talking about sexual hookup culture here on Voices. We'll continue our conversation with Leslie Bell. She's a sociologist and psychotherapist out in Berkeley, California, and she has just published the book Hard to Get, 20-something Women and the Paradox of Sexual Freedom. For your book, Leslie, you found that many 20-something women think about relationships as impeding their personal development as they build their professional lives. And I would imagine they get some of that from their parents, who may be encouraging them to not settle down yet. Is that
Absolutely.
Your impression?
It was actually something of a surprising finding to me. I didn't imagine that I was going to hear that about parents. I knew I sort of had been teaching and working with college students and 20-somethings enough to have the sense that that was the discourse among their peers, that, it's not the time for relationships because you need to, the relationships are greedy, they take up too much of your time, and it sort of drags you away from what is the primary task of either college or your 20s, which is really, you know, being ambitious and meeting professional goals and working on your own individual personal development. But yeah, I was surprised to learn that many young women heard from their parents, who certainly want the best for them and who wanted them to take advantage of all of this freedom that they had. And, you know, I think sometimes from moms who themselves didn't get enough of an opportunity to advance their own careers and education, you know, they would get encouragement to delay relationships. Now's not the time. You need to really spend your college years and 20s focused on your own development, and a relationship can take away from that. You know, interestingly, that certainly relationships can be greedy, but in some ways that message ends up being part of a bigger cultural message about the role of relationships too, and the sense that development needs to happen solely on your own, individually, and it kind of denies the fact that actually a lot of our really important development happens in relationships, both with our families, our friends, and with partners, that we learn a lot about ourselves in those places. So it's a mixed bag.
And I want to continue on this idea of what parents or mentors might have to say to younger people. Our executive producer, Mike and Scott, recently recorded a chat with our show host, Dan Gottlieb, on this topic. And she asked Dan what challenges parents are likely to face when they offer protective guidance to their children.
Parents have to deal with their own anxiety about it, but they do need to talk about it openly and honestly. And if you do the doom and gloom thing, you're going to fail. If you come at it with a pointed finger and a judgment and say it's bad and this negative thing is going to happen, you're going to fail. And here's why. Because your children are probably going to experiment anyway. And what they're going to find when they experiment is they're going to enjoy it. They're going to have anxiety, and they're going to enjoy it. It's going to feel good physically. And they need to know that going in. Parents need to have the same kind of talk about sex with their kids that they do about drugs. That there is a positive side here. It does make you feel good, and it does make you feel loved, and it does make you forget about your problems in the short run. And then in the long run, you might feel bad about yourself. So here's what you have to learn about it. But you have to be open and honest and forthright with them. You want to set up an environment where your kids feel safe to come back to you to talk about it if they've tried it.
So, Leslie, how would you advise parents to talk to their children about hooking up and other complicated sexual issues?
It's a great question. You know, I think parents can offer, you know, the primary role that I think parents can play here is really offering themselves as, you know, available to be connected to their kids, which I know all parents want to do, available as role models for people who, you know, wrestle with complicated things and don't make things seem simple. I think we don't serve kids well when we just tell them, you know, sort of flat out, this is not something to participate in because it will hurt you, or this is something that will be good for you, but to really help our kids think critically about, you know, the cultural material that's coming at them, the kind of music that Diane was talking about, the just everything in the culture that they're consuming, but also to really pay attention to their own desires. And, you know, these are not easy conversations to have with our kids, of course, but to help them, you know, one of the biggest things we can do is to help our kids know themselves securely in relation to a culture that bombards them and a peer culture that bombards them with all kinds of information that may not match up with what they want.
Okay, well, I think I'd like to get to the phones again and see what else we have going on. Michael joins us on Voices in the Family. Hi, Michael. Oh. Okay, we'll try Nicole. Nicole's standing by. Hi, Nicole. Welcome to Voices in the Family.
Yes, hello. I wanted to actually make a comment regarding social media. It's played a huge role in my life, my love life. In my early 20s, I used it a lot for, you know, hookups. It was, you know, you got to talking to somebody and you went out to dinner and then, you know, had a, you know, a kind of friends with benefits thing. But I also actually met my husband through social media. I'm going to date myself. I used MySpace and, you know, we have an incredibly successful marriage. We based it on friendship at first because both of us had come from situations where we had, you know, never really had a successful relationship because of the hookup kind of atmosphere. But we waited 4 months into our relationship before we had sex for the first time, and it has made us have an incredibly strong marriage.
Well, that sounds wonderful. Thank you for sharing that. Good insight from Nicole. Leslie, so in one case, social media was good for hookups. In another case, it was good for finding her soulmate.
Absolutely. Social media is, you know, it really depends on how you use it, as Nicole illustrates beautifully. It can be available for all kinds of purposes and can really, you know, be a way to get to know people slowly in some cases and too quickly in others. Or if people are wanting hookups, it can be exactly the vehicle through which to do that. It in and of itself, it's not an evil. It's sort of how we use it toward our own ends that sort of makes it helpful or not so helpful.
Well, you know, we touched on consequences. What have you learned from the women whom you spoke with for your book about 20-something women and consequences of this fleeting style of being with someone?
Well, it really varies. It depends very much on the degree to which women themselves were wanting to participate and feeling good about their participation in hookup culture. So some of the women I spoke with went through periods where they, you know, felt very agentic and in control and good about the experience, and it furthered their development. Other women, though, used hookups in some ways defensively as a way to protect themselves against the kind of complications and vulnerability that come from relationships, which is understandable, right? Relationships are kind of scary and vulnerable, and that level of intimacy can be difficult to tolerate. And some of the young women I spoke with would end up sort of staying in a phase of hooking up out of some fear about entering into that kind of a relationship. And they'd set it up in their minds in a way as impossible to have both, to have good sex and good relationships. so would end up kind of choosing one or the other and so then depriving themselves.
So you call this splitting. This is a splitting scenario.
I do. And I saw this. So splitting is a phenomenon where it's a term psychologists use to describe kind of black and white thinking, which sometimes is very useful. You know, we all need to use it to organize the world and experience like here and there and you and I. But sometimes it's a defensive thing that we mobilize in times of uncertainty and anxiety to manage the complexity that's in front of us. So many of the young women I saw would use splitting to think about sex and relationships and end up deciding they needed to either choose good sex or good relationships, or another common split was relationships or career development. I mean, for the purposes of this show, the sex and relationship split is the more relevant one. And they would end up depriving themselves of knowing, you know, some women really do, for a period of time, just want to have sort of casual sex. At a certain point, though, most people ended up wanting some combination of both. They would want good sex and a relationship, but it would feel kind of psychologically impossible to hold on to both of those desires at the same time.
Yeah, it's interesting. So this is what our head wants and what our heart desires, and you're saying sometimes they don't really match up at
Absolutely.
The same time, which can be very complicated. Well, I'd love to ask you more things, but I feel like we're really running out of time and we wouldn't do another question any justice. But I just want to thank you so much for joining us and wish you well on your book. Good luck. It is released this week.
Yes, thank you so much. It's really been a pleasure to talk with you and callers.
Yeah, thank you so much. And I've been talking with Leslie Bell about sexual hookup culture, and she's the author of the new book, Hard to Get, 20-something Women and the Paradox of Sexual Freedom. Earlier, we spoke with Justin Garcia from the Kinsey Institute, and he's been promoting a recent body of research on the topic of sexual hookup culture. Next week on Voices in the Family, we'll be talking about our relationship with money. Please comment on today's show by going to whyy.org/voices, and you can download this and other Voices shows there or on iTunes. You can follow us on Twitter at Voices in the Fam. The engineer for today's show has been Al Banks. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content here at WHYY. Emily Haas is our production assistant. She was on the phones today. And Mike and Scott is our executive producer. She directed today's show. I'm producer Jennifer Lynn, sitting in for Dan Gottlieb. Join us again. Have a great week.